From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. In 1997, life seemed perfect for Peter Young. He'd landed his dream broadcasting job and married his wife. But what seems perfect on the outside can sometimes not be telling the entire truth on the inside. As Peter claims, he was brainwashed into a cult starting at that time. He is joining us now to talk more about this experience as he's chronicled it in his new memoir. It's called Stop the Tall Man, Save the Tiger, My Journey in and Out of a Cult. Peter, it's really nice to have you on the program.
Gemma, thanks for having me.
So let's go back all the way to 1997, almost 30 years ago. What was life looking like for you at that point?
Life was looking up for sure. You know, you and I were both in the TV market in Southeast Idaho, working for a pittance, but still loving life because we were doing what we loved. And then I got this dream job working for OLN, the Outdoor Life Network, covering outdoor sports like skiing and cycling. And then I met and married this wonderful, beautiful woman. And then a year later, we had our first child. I signed a new contract. I had the world by the horns, so to speak. It was fantastic.
And then what happens, though? Because you write in your memoir about Paige and her uncle Robert. Who was he? I mean, how did he manage to become so influential in not just in your life, but really in your marriage and your family?
Yeah, he took over our lives. And that's the question. Who was this guy and how did he do it? Mm-hmm. We called him Uncle Robert. He wasn't related to any of us. But he had a stranglehold on Paige and her family before she was even born. So when I met her, I already knew about the quote-unquote Clausen family guru. And for the first few years of our marriage, you know, he lived in Southern California. We lived in Idaho. He was kind of a distant presence in our lives. At least that's what it seemed like to me. But, you know, he was always a cell phone call away. And so Paige would slowly but surely over the years just start relying on him more and more. I think she was always, in a sense, brainwashed. For me, Gemma, you know, it took many years. I was initially very skeptical of the guy. I thought he was nuts, to be honest. And then, you know, you keep hearing about how brilliant a guy is from your wife, and you admire her, respect her opinion, from your in-laws. And I was the only guy in our little group that would ever question him. And so I eventually just kind of got beaten down and worn down because trying to, you know, always be the one asking questions and pointing odd things out, kind of standing alone as an island, was exhausting.
So with that said, was this Uncle Robert, you know, you say he had this stranglehold, not just on Paige, but on her extended family. I am assuming that, you know, he didn't have this hold only on her family. I mean, what did he have influence over, you know, other families as well? I mean, what were you, you know, seeing and experiencing?
Great question. That's another question everybody asks. You know, were there others? Were there the Jones, the Smith, the Anderson family, whatever, right? And our cult was very small. And at the time, I didn't know it was a cult. I can look back now and honestly say it was. At its largest, there was probably 10 to 12 adults plus all of our children. So it would have been, you know, my in-laws, a couple other adults and our kids. So it was very tight-knit, very close. We kind of circled the wagons around Uncle Robert. You know, he had these crazy ideas that if, you know, anybody found out, you know, then you would start questioning him. So we, of course, always had to protect him. So Gemma, we weren't out on the streets of, you know, Pocatello, Boise, or Idaho Falls, trying to spread the message of Uncle Robert. We're the exact opposite. So, you know, my family, the greater, you know, Young family, my parents and brothers, I kind of kept a lot of this secret from them. And I look back and I think, well, yeah, you know, I did because I knew in the back of my mind, it was all really crazy. But to those of us in the cult, it wasn't. He was sublime. He was brilliant.
What were some of these beliefs, I guess, that he held that looking back on it, you can now say, wow, that really was, you know, cultish behavior and brainwashing going on.
Sure. Well, you know, for him, all of recorded history was a struggle between Jews and Christians, and every recession, depression, war, you name it, plane crash was a Jewish conspiracy. And he looked at all of current events and historic events through that lens. So he's a raving anti-Semite. And then you weren't really saved. You weren't a Christian unless he said so, which is a common ploy by cult leaders. They act as a gatekeeper to God and whatever religion you're in. So therefore, you know, he would determine who was saved, who wasn't. He also taught that casinos were the true churches in America, which is one of his very odd opinions, and that anybody could show up to a casino and be quote unquote blessed by the Lord, which listen, you want to go to a casino, that's fine. But I usually see people in a casino worshiping money, not God. And that's just some of the ideas. He had a lot of those. And, you know, listen, we're kind of a free country, right? You're allowed to have wacky ideas, but it was the control. You're not allowed to question him. That really made it abusive. Mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, not physically or sexually, but the mental control, the undue mind control, was where the abuse lay.
So how, I mean, as you said in the beginning, you thought this guy was, you know, nuts, right? But hey, it was your, you know, a good friend, the guru of your wife's family, as you say. When was it? I mean, can you pinpoint a specific time where all of a sudden you truly started questioning this and you truly started thinking like, this isn't right. This isn't okay.
2 points, Gemma. The first one was about, about a year after 9/11. So I grew up in New Jersey and I had friends who were in the buildings and got out on 9/11. I had a high school classmate who was widowed on 9/11. And I remember him talking about 9/11 and how 80,000 people died. And he started going on and on about how the Jews were doing all this. And I was stunned. It was the first time I'd ever heard his ideology and theology about the Jews. And I was frankly scared. I mean, it was very sinister. And I remember telling Paige that night, I don't think we should have anything to do with this guy. And that was, what, 2002, maybe? Very early on in our marriage. And I never followed up. I never said, hey, you know, honey, what are we doing? We shouldn't have anything to do with this guy. He is peddling in anger and fear. And then the years went by. You know, I was the proverbial frog in the pot of boiling water. So then the next time that I really realized that, Gemma, was when I was, you know, kicked out. My wife left me. She started to tell all the kids that I was the devil, Satan, a sorcerer. She and Uncle Robert were convinced I was a fraud. I was not saved. And so when I had friends and family finally reach out to me and love me and help me out through this process, because I was a mess. I was never suicidal, but I was an absolute wreck. This is in 2017. About a year later, that's when I finally realized this was a cult and I was brainwashed. Because you never know in the moment you're in a cult or that you're brainwashed. Nobody does. It's only after the fact, if you're fortunate enough to get out, that you will realize you were brainwashed. You were in a cult.
So this went on for 20 years, basically. And as you said, you were kicked out. Your wife left you. What was it? I mean, and maybe who was it? Was it your family, friends, who started helping you see, you know, what had really gone on over those 20 years?
It was my family and friends. And I firmly believe my faith is a lot stronger now because of all this. The Lord opened my eyes and ears to the truth. And I didn't want to admit it, Jim. It was kind of embarrassing. Like, oh, come on. I know Uncle Robert was bad. He was weird, but it wasn't a cult. And then a friend of mine who had been in the cult and got out sent me a book. It was anonymously at the time. And I found out years later it was him. It was a book on cults. And I thought, oh, come on. This is nonsense. I finally picked it up, read it, and highlighted half the book. And I was like, that was me. That was my experience. And so, you know, my brothers, my parents and friends in Idaho and all over the country at first really didn't even recognize me. I was a shadow of myself. I was scared of my shadow when I finally, you know, came out of the cult. But through all of their love and patience with me, that's how I recovered.
You know, what's interesting is, as you said, getting this book about cults, right? Because even listening to your story, I think a lot of people would think like, oh, come on, it's not a cult. There's like, as you said, you know, 10 or 12 adults. I mean, it wasn't, you know, we weren't out trying to recruit other people. We were, I mean, I think we have this idea that a cult is, you know, these compounds, right? And it's hundreds of people. I mean, we think of Jim Jones, right? And has that been, you know, I don't want to say difficult, but where you've had to tell your story and be like, look, it doesn't have to be what we may assume is a cult, if that makes sense.
And that's part of the reason why I wrote my book and why I do, you know, appearances like this, is to share my story and spread the message that cults really have two things in common. They can look very different in size and scope and shape, you know, living in a compound versus not. But they all have, number one, undue mind control, which is abusive and coercive. And then number two, they all have a leader of some kind. And Uncle Robert checked every box. He was narcissistic, had a grandiose sense of self. You know, he's having conversations with Alan Greenspan, writing letters to Saddam Hussein. He makes all the rules, but none of them apply to him. And so he checked all of those boxes. He was indeed a cult leader. And then that book I read, Gemma, was written by a guy named Dr. Stephen Hassan. He's written several books. He's kind of one of the experts in our country. And he says that the biggest difference between, you know, he was in the Mooney cult back in like the 70s or 80s versus then versus now, is that there are this rise in mini cults from anywhere from like 2 to 3 people to about a dozen or 15. He said those have proliferated. And that's what I was in. And yes, people will say, oh, come on, it would never happen to me. Fine. I'm here to tell you it could happen to anybody. If it hadn't been for my wife, I probably would have never listened to Uncle Robert. You know, over a cup of coffee after 15 minutes, I'd say the guy was nuts and I would have never listened to him. But I did. So there's a million different ways to get sucked into it. And here's another important point. You're right. We didn't live in a compound. We didn't look like a cult. That shows you how easy it is for small cults to hide in society, right? Like I was on TV just like you, and nobody knew what was going on in my private life. Nobody knew the craziness going on behind the scenes.
Well, what do you hope people take away if they pick up a copy of your memoir and read this?
Well, I hope they realize that cults are real. They're there. Mm-hmm. They can easily hide within society. And then I always say that there's, you know, three messages within my story. First and foremost, you have to maintain good fellowship. Christian fellowship is important to me, but you got to maintain fellowship with your friends, with your family. If you notice someone who doesn't, you know, show up to book club or Friday night bowling, whatever it is, you know, reach out. Don't let your friends and family become isolated. Number two, a strong marriage has to have Christ at the center. You can't have some guru or anybody else getting in between the husband and the wife. That's just a recipe for disaster. And then number three, in the Christian faith, salvation comes first and then sanctification, meaning you get saved and then your life starts to show it. If anybody tells you you can reverse that order, they're trying to act as a religious guru, a gatekeeper to God, run in the opposite direction because you don't want to listen to that guy. Those are the main points that I hope people get out of reading my book.
So it's been, what, about 6 years since all of this happened to you?
Seven years.
Where is your life today?
Well, it's a good question. You know, Paige and I had 5 children. And I always tell people that being a parent is a marathon, not a sprint. So that's been the most difficult thing over the last few years. You know, we did end up getting divorced. She has since remarried. And I've moved on, but with the children, it's been very difficult, seeing how harmful this experience was on them. So my relationship is very strained with some of the children, and hopefully that will improve. But I still live in Bozeman, Montana. You know, we have not left the community, and I have a wonderful community of people surrounding me that have read the book, know the story, and don't judge me. They're there for me. They're wonderful friends. So life is good. Gemma, you would not have recognized me if you saw me during the last, you know, years of being in that cult. Again, I was a wet spaghetti noodle of a man. I was completely beaten down. Now I'm a million times stronger because I don't look to a guru or a spouse for approval or, you know, can I say or do or think this? I trust the Lord that he'll give me the strength and the wisdom to do all this.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk with us about this and to tell us about your journey. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Gemma, for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.